Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sulzer's Full Year Results 2022 conference call and live webcast. I am Sandra, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to Christoph Ladner, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Sandra. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Welcome to Sulzer's annual results presentation 2022 here in the Widde in Zurich. After two years of virtual events, I'm happy to see you all physically again. This is a great pleasure to us. With me today, our Executive Chairwoman, Suzanne Thoma, and our CFO, Thomas Zickler. Before we start, I would like to draw your attention to the safe harbor statement on slide number two in the handouts. Please note that this statement also applies to any verbal statement made during today's presentation. Please also note that we will show so-called alternative performance measures as defined by SIX Swiss Exchange. You will find all the bridges on how you can calculate these alternative performance measures from reported figures in the financial section of our annual report. For today's agenda, we will have the presentation followed by Q&A, and thereafter, we will serve Apéro Riche at the back of the room. Maybe for the media guys, please turn to my colleague, Domenico Truncellito, if you wanna go for an interview, and he will coordinate everything. Thank you for that. That's now for my housekeeping part. It's a pleasure to hand over now to our Executive Chairwoman, Suzanne Thoma. Suzanne, the stage is yours.
Thank you very much, Christoph. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Thank you very much for your interest in Sulzer und grüezi miteinander. It is my pleasure today to announce results of 2022, results that have been achieved in a rather challenging economic environment with fluctuating market conditions and many unseen events, as you know very well. Nevertheless, we have shown as Sulzer a very resilient performance throughout the year. You can see that in our operational results. You can see that in our very high order intake. Also, the underlying operational profitability is at the highest level, at least since 10 years. Nevertheless, also our results have been impacted to a certain degree by not to a certain degree. They have been impacted clearly by one-off effect. One-off effect is our exit from Russia, which we have decided on early in the year 2022, and which we have carried out consequently thereafter. Also, we have experienced an increase in our net working capital, which is due to the situation in the market, to the problems in China, to the problems in the supply chain issue. Nevertheless, we cannot be quite happy with our performance in the area of net working capital management. All in all, a very nice result. I believe we can say +9% in orders, plus a little less than 2% in sales, and which we are very proud of, an operational profitability of 10%. The company is healthy, and the company is strong, and the company has a high net core income, which leads us to propose, or the board of director has proposed to, has suggested or will suggest to the general assembly to propose an unchanged dividend of 3.50 francs per share. This is based on our core net income and the dividend policy that we follow. Now, let's go and look a little bit more at the financial details and how these overall figures come together. I hand over to my colleague, Thomas.
Thank you very much, Suzanne. Ladies and gentlemen, also from my side, welcome. Let me present to you now the overview of the Sulzer Group, talking about the development in 2022. As you can see, and already said by Susan, we had an order intake growth of 9.1%. The growth was mainly coming from Chemtech and from Flow Equipment. Services was also growing, but to a lower extent, because services is our division which is most impacted by our decision to exit the Russian market. When we look to the sales side here, you see that we have grown by 1.8%, and this is mainly because of the supply chain issues and the energy BU within the Flow Equipment division. Some of you maybe remember in 2020, we had in energy a slowdown of more than 23% compared to the prior year. This was 2019, because of the pandemic and because of less infrastructure investments in this year. And seeing the longer lead times in the project business in energy, we have seen then in 2022 the impact on the sales side. Talking about operational profitability, you can see here that the operational profitability went up by 70 basis points. We are talking now about an operational profit of 380 million. And this was caused most of all by our cost discipline. And we also had many operational improvements, and we were very selective on the order intake. That we achieved this very well also to see our pricing handed forward to the customers. You see that our order intake gross margin grew by 40%. And this also shows that we are able in a competitive market, because of our strong market position, to forward the price increases, the higher input crisis, prices to our customers. It is also reflected in the gross margin, excluding the impact from Russia. You will see then in the financial statements that our gross margin increased by 1.1% to 31.1% compared to the prior year. Now, let's go to the divisions and start with Flow Equipment. So in Flow Equipment, the main message here is that we have a drop in sales, but a significant rise in order intake. And when we talk about order intake, you see here on the chart that we have 8.9% higher order intake compared to prior year. We have in industry and in energy double-digit increases, whereby in water we had only an increase of 4.4%. Why only 4.4%? Here we have seen especially the impact from the exit in Russia, because we lost the municipality business in Russia. We also saw some timing issues from municipalities in China because of several lockdowns there. And additionally, for sure, we had also the supply chain issues there. Coming to the operational profitability, you see that in Flow, the operational profitability went up by 70 basis points. So we have now a profitability of 6.6% in Flow. And here we see a strict cost discipline, but also the focus on a more selective order intake when it comes especially to the energy business. Then let's come to the next division, services. As said, services is most impacted by our one-offs. However, services did a very solid performance in the year 2022. We have, talking about orders, when we talk about orders, an increase of 1.6%. We have seen in Americas order increase of 11.1%, and in Asia Pacific of 2.4%, but this all was offset by the lower EMEA region, which was impacted by the Russia exit. When we talk about sales, we are on the sales side 0.7% higher than last year, and sales basically reflects the same story as I explained to you on the order intake side, because the time from order intake to sales is much quicker in services. And here a hint on the slide, because if some of you may wonder that we are showing here a plus 0.7 and the number actually is lower, this is because we had in services a minus 10 million FX impact on the sales for 2022. Then the operational profitability in services remained flat. This is a big achievement, because having the same sales and revenues, living in a world of increasing input costs, energy prices, salary, wages, and so on. So here we did an excellent job in getting these higher input prices forwarded to our customers. Then we come to the star of our divisions. This is Chemtech. Chemtech really performed very well last year. You see here order intake of 22.5% growth. We have here all the regions, all the segments growing: chemicals, gas, refining, services, and renewables are all up double digit. Also on the sales side, we are almost 15% higher than we were the prior year. The operational profitability as a consequence rose by 80 basis points to nowadays then 10.8%, and this is mainly a volume impact and also a strict cost discipline and the capability of pricing power of Chemtech in certain markets. We are extremely proud of our increase in the renewable business, where we saw 37.8% order intake in the renewables. With this, we have now 15.4% renewables stake in Chemtech total, or 128 million, compared to 13.4% renewable stake last year. Then coming to EBIT and net income, which are both impacted, you all know the story, by one-offs. Let me start with net income. Compared to last year, where we had 141 million, you see that this year we end up only with 28 million, since we had 134 million one-off impacts. The same counts for EBIT. The EBIT more or less halved because of 147 one-off impacts. And I think it's needless to say, and this is what we tried to indicate here with the light blue columns, that without the one-off impacts, our EBIT would have grown 16% and our net income by 15%. Then free cash flow. So on the prior slides, I have already explained to you that because our order intake has grown much faster than our sales grew, we have built up a high order backlog. We are sitting on a high order backlog of 1.85 billion. Plus, we have the challenges on the supply chain side. So what does it mean? As a consequence, we have a massive build up in our net working capital. And you can see this here. We have 148 million more net working capital than we had the prior year. It is consisting of 92 million more inventories and 56 million more accounts receivable over payables. What we also saw when we investigated a bit more in the net working capital issue last year, that we have some areas of improvement potential, where we will go this year more in the supply chain management to further improve the performance of Sulzer, talking about this topic. However, all in all, and this is the most important message for all of you, we are not worried about this cash flow, about this low cash flow of 58 million, because we see this only as a temporary impact. We see the first tendencies already started in Q4 last year, that we have a relief on the supply chain side, that we are coming back this year to the normal levels of our free cash flow, which is around 200 million. Then, talking about our balance sheet, we have still a very solid, a very strong balance sheet despite the one-offs which we had to digest this year. We currently have a net debt EBITDA ratio of 2.1, compared with 1.0 last year. We paid back on a net basis last year bonds, Swiss bonds, for 155 million. So in July last year, we paid back 325 million bond. And in November last year, we issued a new bond of 170 million. So the net is 155 million. This is also why you see here the debt decreasing by 155 million. Cash, we spent on the repayment of the bond, on the dividends, and also on the net working capital. And you saw that we invested in inventories more or less of 148 million. Also last year, as always, we continue to hold back the dividend, which is belonging to our anchor shareholder, to TVEL. And this amount in the meantime is totaling to 332 million. All in all, seeing the one-time impacts and seeing our business development and our very, very strong balance sheet, we see for the future the financial and also the operational possibilities that we can really act here at all times. Then let me come to my last slide. It was already also mentioned by Susan, we have, as I have shown to you in the last slides, a very strong underlying business performance, and we are very resilient in these current challenging markets. And therefore, we are the opinion, because when you deduct the one-offs, and I've shown this to you on the prior slides, and best example here is the core net income. When you see the core net income last year, core net income was 213 million, and in the prior year it was 195 million. So our core net income last year increased by 9.2%. And this is the message: the underlying business of Sulzer is very strong, and therefore we recommend, or our board will propose to the AGM, an unchanged dividend of 3.50, of 3.50 Rappen. With this, I hand back to Susan for the guidance and strategy perspective.
Okay. Yeah, we are looking cautiously optimistic into the year 2023. We are forecasting a sales growth between 7% and 9%. That is, of course, also underpinned by the high order backlog of 1.8 billion Swiss francs that we have already in our books. But we also see continued good order intake already in the months of January and February. So we forecast an increase in order intake of 3% to 6%, and we believe that we will have an operational profitability above 10%. Of course, these are figures which do not include any currency effects, so they are on a comparable basis. Oh, thank you. Well, here again, these are the figures. You know them also from the press release. So the company is in good shape and continues to perform in times which are not easy, but which are very well manageable. I would like to give a short look on the strategic and the operational perspective of Sulzer, and then I would like to go into some examples of what we are doing so that these abstract words that we are using here become have a little bit more meaning for everybody. Well, we have a strategic perspective, of course, as every company does in Sulzer, and we can say that we are in markets which are attractive. They are attractive because they are relevant and they are growing. They are also attractive because they are in transformational mode, at least partly, which always also yields new opportunities for a company like Sulzer. We have strong market positions, mostly, however, in niche markets. So not in the bulk markets, but in the niche markets, but there we command also higher margins. And as we have seen in the rather rocky 2022, it is a company that is resilient and that can also grow even if the environment is not optimal. From an operational perspective, it is very important for us that we take care of our margin, that we continue to increase the margin, which also means that we cannot accept just every project, but just those projects that are profitable enough. We are strong in cash generation, definitely as a company, and we have to work strongly on quality and on-time delivery so we can further improve both our strategic base and our operational performance. So which markets are we in? What are we really doing? As I just mentioned, Sulzer is in attractive markets and in growing markets and in relevant markets. They are relevant markets for a growing world population and for all markets, particularly those where we still have an emerging middle class. This is maybe a perspective that out of the central of Europe we forget sometimes, but there are still hundreds of millions of people emerging into middle class coming from poverty. And these people, they need energy and infrastructure, just as we all do. And that is where Sulzer is strongly present. Also, we are present in the process industry. What are examples of process industry? Well, the construction industry, the agricultural industry, or the polymer industry. And we are present in the chemical industry, both specialty chemicals and fine chemicals. Now, these are important heavy-duty industries. And these industries are in transformation. They want to and they have to reduce their ecological footprint. They have to consume less energy. They have to consume less water. And they have to become less CO2 intensive and many other important aspects. And Sulzer is present there as a partner. I will show you a few examples just in a few minutes. Sulzer is also present, particularly in the wastewater area, both in the municipal wastewater area, but also in the industrial wastewater area, which plays into what I just have said about the process industry and the chemical industry. Sulzer is also developing technologies and introducing them in the market in areas that are still nascent or emerging, where we have great hope for the future, but which for the time being, or at least at the moment, are not that big. These are biopolymers, so polymers not coming from fossil substances, but coming from plants, plant-based polymers, or recycling, mostly chemical recycling in the case of Sulzer, and also bio and synthetic fuels, so for example, fuels produced from waste. Let's have a look. Let's have a look in a few examples. I would like to start with the example of an enhanced oil recovery in Qatar. What are we doing there? We are using, or we are providing with our pumps, which are highly specialized pumps producing high-pressure liquid CO2, which is used then for the recovery of oil in the oil wells. And it has different advantages. It maximizes the recovery from oil from the existing oil fields. So this reduces the number of oil fields that you need for the same amount of energy. The CO2, the liquid CO2, replaces the water, which is a big benefit because then you don't have to clean it, and also it stores CO2. So on many counts, this is an ecological project, although it is located in the oil and gas industry. And you see across the board in the industry such efforts to reduce the ecological footprint. We are all aware that this is not the final solution for net zero, but we will have a transition phase which will last decades, and we can gain a lot of upside in this transition phase by reforming the traditional industries. I'll show you some other examples. For example, here, Sulzer acts as a decarbonization partner for Vår Energi, another oil company, who wants to reduce their CO2 footprint and also want to save money, of course. Sulzer went in there and analyzed the operation with their Blue Box technology, that's a database algorithms to understand where energy and cost is being spent, and came up with a rather large energy saving potential of 5,000 megawatt hours. Now, 5,000 megawatt hours, you know, what is 5,000 megawatt hours? That's quite a lot. That's about what 1,800 Swiss households consume only in electricity per year. And if you want to find 5,000 megawatt hours in the electrical industry, you need to build about 1.5 wind turbines in Switzerland, cost about 4 million Swiss francs, and last forever until you have built them. So these are substantial contributions to making an industry at least somewhat lighter in its ecological footprint. And Sulzer here active as a decarbonization partner, if you want, as a full service provider. Let's look at another application, sustainable fuels in Brazil. Huge amount of sustainable fuel being produced by our partner in PASA in Latin America. They are the largest producer of bioethanol. And this plant here produces 2.6 million liters of ethanol per day. That is a lot. Sulzer has already supplied more than 1,000 parts to this customer. For this specific project, we were able to deliver 250 process pumps, axle flow pumps, and 18 agitators. We were chosen because we have the broadest portfolio, so they can work for us with all their applications. This is a major contribution also to the use of less fuel, because the bioethanol can then, not less fuel, but less fuel derived from fossil, because bioethanol then can be used as fuel, and Sulzer is in the middle of it. Let's look at a different project. Again, it's about reducing the use of fossil. And here, the job of Sulzer was to purify, to separate and to purify renewable methanol. So what is renewable methanol? This is methanol that is being produced out of hydrogen and CO2. And the hydrogen was gained by electrolysis. I don't know how you say that in English. Electrolysis, where the energy came from a 300 megawatt solar power plant. And this purification and separation is an absolutely important step. It may be a small step in the total chain that you need from CO2 to methanol, but if you don't get that right, you have nothing. And that is a typical positioning of the Sulzer technologies, where we really make a difference. This renewable methanol is being used, for example, by Merck, this large logistic company, to fuel one of their ships. The installation will produce 32,000 tons of e-methanol per year, so quite a lot. Let's look at something other, another pain point that we definitely have globally, and that is plastic recycling or plastic waste. The recycling is not a pain point, the waste is the pain point. Sulzer is contributing to solutions for plastic recycling. Plastic recycling, where what you recycle is back to virgin material. So material with the original properties that you can use everywhere. In mechanical recycling, while this is also something good and should be done, however, the material is reprocessed so often that it degrades in quality. Here you go back to the original. And this is plastic waste, as is written here, that is then reconverted into high-grade feedstock for the chemical industry in this particular case. We are speaking of a plastic-to-chemical facility. It's really still more of a pilot plant, but a large pilot plant with 24,000 tons production per year. Our customer Endeavour plants, 30 full-scale plants across Europe that will then recycle 1 million tons per year. That is a lot. And it is a beginning of a very interesting journey to reduce the plastic pollution that we all face. Another example, quite different and still fascinating. And this is PLA, polylactic acid, the bioplastic, originates from plants. Our customer is NatureWorks, which is a joint venture of a Thai company called PTT and Cargill from the United States. They are a leader in PLA production. And again, Sulzer is not present in the entire value chain, but Sulzer is present in two fundamental steps. One is the purification of what we call lactide. That's one of the steps pretty close to the final product, and is present in the polymerization to the end product. And the polymerization step is crucial for the quality of the product, because if you do it right, you can really stir what type of quality of PLA you will have, and you can balance, for example, durability and degradability of PLA. We are very proud of that project, and this is a project that, and generally this technology is already quite sizable also in our current business. Something completely different. How do you produce a net zero waste treatment installation? Well, our customer Fabrik West has tried it together with Sulzer and was able to increase or to modify the treatment of the sludge in such a way that the biogas production was increased by 20 to 30%, and this is then captured as process energy. As a result, our customer is energy neutral and produces 1.3 million cubic meter of biogas per year. Is that a lot? I think it is a lot. It is 8,000 megawatt hours, approximately. These are all very approximate figures, which, if you remember the previous slide, would then amount to about the energy of 3,000 Swiss standard households. Quite a lot, and a major contribution to a sustainable future. Here we are in a heavy-duty process industry. Pulp and paper industry uses a lot of energy. It's a new large bioproduct mill in Finland, milling the wood, as a wood scraps, parts of wood, to produce afterwards paper, but also to produce sanitary tissues, to produce all sorts of products derived from wood products. This is a project where we are very proud that we can be a part of it, because the customer has clearly said we only want the best available technology in the whole value chain. And Sulzer is very present there with its pump business, 400 process pumps, medium consistency pump. These are pumps that are able to pump this mixture of fluid and wood, so to speak, and also mixer. Production is a lot, 1.5 million tons of pulp. And on top of all doing all of that, this plant is generating 2 terawatt hours of energy. About 3% of Switzerland's use of electricity is about 60% of what Mühleberg used to produce. So this is a substantial amount of energy. This plant is now 250% energy self-sufficient and provides its... They have an electricity plant that is attached to the plant, and they are now providing electricity for the villages nearby. So you see, it's really a little walk through a choice of projects, very different projects. I find them very interesting. And you see, there are the new things, recycling, polylactic acid, new things, nascent things, and then there are the huge savings that we can do with the established process industries, the chemical industry, also the oil and gas industry, to ease the phase of the transition to net zero. Why is Sulzer well positioned there? Well, we are clearly a tier one engineering brand. You don't get fired for buying Sulzer. Not everything is perfect about Sulzer, but you don't get fired for buying Sulzer, because Sulzer has really globally, not only in Switzerland, globally, a great brand name. We are normally in mission-critical applications or in mission-critical parts of the entire value chain, which may, not always, but very often means that it depends that what we do really functions. It also means that we cannot be replaced that easy. This is all easily. That is also the case because of our clearly strong engineering capabilities, the global reach. For the size of our company, we are really very global, represented around the world, and we have the corresponding footprint. And I'm also very proud to say that we seem not to be the worst employer, having been recognized as a top employer in our 5 key countries. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I come to the end of my presentation. What are the takeaways from a strategic and operational point of view at this point in time? We are strong in established markets. These established markets are important. They will continue to grow, but in parallel, they are undergoing a fundamental transformation. Our contribution is clearly to increase the energy efficiency, the resource efficiency, sustainability, and also less water consumption, as an example. There are new markets that emerge for Sulzer. They are emerging. They are not yet that big. These are, for example, bio-based polymers, recycling, waste to fuel, waste to chemical, carbon capture, and also the use of carbon for application where one can also use water. We are a strong technological company, and we are more and more becoming a company that also focuses on the customer when we speak about technological leadership. Technological leadership not for sake in itself, but to really create customer value. Our operational and commercial excellence will have to lay the foundation for future growth. We have room for improvement there, but we are very well on our way. And of course, if you want to build value of a company, you better make sure you use your capital wisely. We have a solid balance sheet. We are in a solid financial situation, but we want to make best use of our capital to increase the value of the company. And so I come to the end. Yeah, we have a solid balance sheet. We do have strong cash generation. Quite amazing how strong this company is in cash generation. And this lies the foundation for financial, for operational, and also for strategic flexibility. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Suzanne. Thank you, Thomas. Now we come to the Q&A session, and then we take the first question from the room. So first question from the room, please state your name and company, please, for the guys in the call.
Yeah, good morning. So I'm Michael Roost from Bader Helvea. So my first question is a little bit on the search for a new CEO. How is that progressing? And in conjunction with that, regarding the new governance steps which have been implemented, what is temporary, what is permanent? And then finally, on the working capital side, you mentioned some internal inefficiencies. Can you just quantify a little bit what's internal, what's external?
The search for a new CEO has not begun. It will probably not begin for quite some time. We are focusing now on the development of a new strategy. We do that very thoroughly, because it is substantial for the future of Sulzer, what we decide there. And then we will also have this governance model now for at least the first phase of the strategy implementation. Because this situation will last for a certain time, we have now introduced new governance measures, like the lead independent director, which is important. We have also introduced a governance committee. I am stepping down from the remuneration committee. So we have quite some checks and balances in the system, particularly when it comes to governance questions. That was your second question. The third question, well, you have noticed that the CFO did not give any figures what is internal and what is external when we come to these developments. And this is also because we can't really quantify it, but we can look at what is happening. We have experience in running companies, and so we know that part is really due to the very difficult situation that we have with supply chain issues, and part we could have done better. Where exactly the line is, I don't know. I just know we can be much better.
In conclusion, does that mean that the sort of temporary dual mandate role is now becoming semi-permanent?
You know, it depends on the results. We are now semi-permanent, yes, probably semi-permanent, whatever that exactly means. We are not looking for a CEO at this point in time.
Come over here.
Thank you and good morning. Arben Hasanai from Fontobel. My first question would be around your guidance, especially around orders. Can you maybe drill down a bit what you see in the segments also at the start of this year? So can we expect the same pattern like last year, or do you see any changes between the segments?
Mm-hmm.
And the second question would be around the Russia exit. I think now you've sold the business. So is this completed, or do you see any more one-offs? Can you comment on that, please?
Mm-hmm. So when we come to flow equipment, we see already an order intake picking up in January. So the first couple of weeks of this year really look promising into 2023. When we come to the different BUs, we have in energy, we are profiting from the transition in the energy market. Topic is biofuels. Topic is also infrastructure investments, which are now coming. You know that this is a late cycler. So we see here not a push, but at least an increase of our order intake in this segment. We also see it on the water side. In industry, we have, as I said, biofuels. And also in the mining sector, we see a pickup. So for flow, I'm really looking very positive in this year, 2023. When we come to services, they have also received the first bigger orders. When I talk about services and bigger orders, I'm talking about sizes of 2 million roundabout and a bit more. So this is also looking very good. We have in Chemtech seen, and I don't want to announce here anything, in Chemtech seen, especially in the PLA sector, some bigger orders which arrived our books. We will announce this by end of Q1. Chemtech, you will see again, and this is in all the areas of Chemtech, that you will be surprised by end of Q1.
A question on Russia. If it's sold and...
Russia, you know, we have announced mid last year that we want to exit the Russian market. It took us really a long time, and it was a very complicated process talking about due diligence, finding the right buyers. To make a long story short, after more than half a year, in December, we almost concluded, and then in January, we signed a contract with a buyer in Russia, a local Russian buyer. However, we now have to wait till the Russian authorities will approve this deal, and this can take 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. Nobody knows exactly how long this will take till we get the approval from the FAS. But as soon as then we get the approval, we can close the deal, and then the four legal Russian entities are sold to this Russian local investor.
Thank you, Alessandro Foletti, Octavian. I have many, but ask three if I may, and then I go back in the queue. Thanks. One by one, maybe it's easier. First question, just an understanding on the rotating equipment. You mentioned organic growth of sales of 0.7% and organic growth of orders 1.6%. I believe this is, you didn't exclude the exit from Russia from there, right? So that include, and that my calculation about 40, 50 million. So if I exclude that, probably you would be at 5-6% growth.
Clear. And the impact of Russia is exactly 47 million.
Right. That was the first one. The second one on the guidance for the margin 2023, 10%, or you say above 10%, but above 10% can be 10.1 or 100%. Can you specify a little bit more what you think?
It depends also very much on, not very much, but on the efforts that we do in the area of operational excellence. That's on purpose, it's not quite clear, but what we can say is that we're not going to become worse from what we have achieved now, quite a level. And if everything goes according to plan, we will certainly not go lower than that.
But if I may add into this one, 7% is your lower range for the growth rate. I would expect, you said 7-9% growth.
Yes.
Right. So let's take seven. That should bring a good operational leverage, that alone.
Yes, this is why we said 10% is the floor.
So the operating leverage, the operational measures.
Yeah, it's exactly what
Right.
we said. It will be above 10%, but it's premature to say whether it's 10.5 or whatever it will be. So it's not going to be below 10% unless something happens that we cannot foresee now.
Right. My last question.
Sure.
I see that Mr. Kottmann is entering the board. He's a chemist like you, used to run Clariant. I hope this is just accidental, that there is not sort of ideas to...
No, that's really accident. Number one, I'm a chemical engineer and not a chemist. So that's a huge difference. And of course, I knew Mr. Kottmann from afar because I always, I think he ran Clariant very well. And so we're very proud that he's going to join our board, but it is nothing pointing in the direction these two companies wouldn't fit anyway.
Thank you.
Christian Arnold, Stifel. Looking at your operating margin performance in the three different divisions, you are now very close to your midterm targets in all divisions, actually, or almost reached it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm aware that today it's probably not the right time to announce new midterm targets, as you are in the middle of the strategy process. Nevertheless, going through these three divisions, I mean, the services, that's kind of stable. The 15% target probably will remain. In the flow equipment business, here you have end markets which are in transformation, as you pointed out. With this transformation, do you expect that you can actually increase your margins further above this midterm target, or would that be more of a burden that you have, let's say, more standard pumps, for example?
So maybe let me start, Susan. I think, yes, we can further increase our margins by further working on our operational excellence and also on our cost base. Talking about the midterm guidance, what we said, when we are further advanced with the strategy discussions with the board, that then by end of this year or latest beginning next year, we will then come back to you and then also revise our midterm guidance.
Somebody back there.
And maybe just to follow on Chemtech then. I mean, here you're building up your renewables business. Does this have above or average margins in the division?
It has avoided within the division. The business is particularly the very new things is still rather small, but it does have an increasing push on the margins, mm-hmm. definitely.
Okay. And in connection to that, I mean, you have built up this business now tremendously, very fast, I think from 50 million to 90 million to 130 million and this year. And you have many, many different end markets, many, many different applications, so to say. I mean, can you follow all these ideas you have? You have to focus somewhere. I mean, it looks like at the moment you're just trying out everything, but I think there will be a certain time where you have to focus. Any comment on that?
Yeah, gladly. You know, it's yes and no. The no part of having to focus is that the interesting thing about Sulz technology, it's like a base technology, like these mass transfer components that we have, the purification technology that we have. And you can take this technology, adapt it somewhat, and bring it into new markets. And that is a very, it's like really something to build on. At the same time, indeed, Sulz has so many opportunities, we will have to focus on what we are doing and then do it well and do it seriously. And that is also part of the strategy process. If we would just follow all the ideas, and reason I don't know, but interesting ideas that we have in our organization, we would really be everywhere and nowhere at the same time. And that we have to avoid, quite well noticed.
Firmbach, AWP. Danke. You mentioned the growth of almost 40% in the field of renewables. And you just announced the collaboration with Phoenix Ecogy in the Netherlands. Can you tell us how much of share of sales or orders you do with this business, with this renewable business? I think it's probably these two sectors, biofuels and recycling, take together.
Yeah, the recycling is still very low. This is really a nascent market. And that this investment that we did in Phoenix is investment in a later stage startup. So what we are doing there is combining the technology of Phoenix with our capability and our technology, and then pilot it, put it into a pilot plan, develop it, and then bring it into the market.
And if you allow a second question, your share is traded with a discount because of the U.S. sanctions against Mr. Wechselberg. Do you see any possible solution for this issue? Is there any development? Thank you.
No, there are no developments to speak of at this point in time. You know that Sulz's role in this is to support if there are developments that are in the interest of Sulz. At the end of the day, what happens is that what can depends on the decisions of the anchor shareholder and partly also on the decision of the authorities. So there we follow the developments and we support. However, let me also remind you that the anchor shareholder has no economic benefit at this point in time, so we are not paying any dividends to him. At the same time, he is our anchor shareholder since 16 years, very much interested in the long-term development of the company, obviously not on short-term profit. And somewhere in this Spannungsfeld, in this pension field, I don't know if the word exists in English, we are navigating. The company is running well, also with this anchor shareholder. You see it in the results.
Hi, Nathalie Olafos from the AFP. Last January, in January,
can you speak up just a little bit, please?
Sorry.
Thank you.
I would like to see if you could provide us with more details on the disposal of the Russian business, because a lot of companies in the EU, in the G7, have tried to pull out of Russia, but the process proved trickier than planned. So could you give us some more details of what happened in Russia?
No, it's relatively simple. As our CFO has pointed out, it was a long and complicated negotiation or process, took more than that 6 months, but we did bring it to a close in January. We have signed the contracts, not only us, but also our buyer has signed the contract, and now it simply has to be approved, like all of these transactions, by the Russian authority. That can take longer or shorter, but for us, it's a done deal.
But if I may ask in more details, why was it difficult? Was it finding the right price, finding the right buyer, and are you happy with the price you got out of?
You have to find the right buyer. You have to do a very extensive due diligence, which did take quite some time, and then of course you negotiate in circumstances which do not give you that much negotiating power, and there are obviously also rather huge cultural differences, and you can't fly there to negotiate and to drink some vodka to come to a conclusion. You do everything from far away, so that's all things that lend themselves to misunderstandings.
Thank you very much. Benjamin Trieber from NZZ. Two questions. The first one is a really quick one. I noticed that your headcount, the number of employees, has been reduced by 1,000. I assume that's the impact of leaving Russia and leaving Poland, if you could elaborate a bit on that. And the second one, as you said, you have really robust results. You said Sulzer is strong, is healthy. You're active. You showed us the examples in many new fields. So if this is already here, why is there a need for a strategic overhaul, for a fundamental change? Thank you.
I'll take the second.
Maybe I take the first one. So the reduction of our employees has nothing to do with Russia, because Russia is still, when you look in our books, it's still consolidated. It is more the impact of our sale of tower field services for Chemtech in Brazil. And here for Tower Field Services, we had round about 1,000 employees, and they were sold last year. And these were mainly temporary ones, but they counted to our headcount. And this is the difference of 1,000 employees.
Thank you. The need for a strategic overhaul comes from the development in the markets. Markets are really evolving fast, and there are also rather fluctuating market conditions. Sulzer has to decide where it wants to play and where it will consciously not play, so that we can maximize the value of the company to the shareholder, of course, but not only, also to our customers and to our employees. So it's really kind of a nice situation to have, But nevertheless, we do need to become very, very clear on our strategy. We have to be very clear on our commercial strategy, and we have to become very clear on our operational excellence.
Good morning, Rolf Renners from the AMG. Maybe a question to Mr. Ziegler. If I recall right, you mentioned a regular free cash flow of 200 million. And that is before dividends. So that's operational after CapEx.
Yes, the free cash flow last year was 211 million. And this is basically the level we want to come back after this one-off impact from the supply chain, which we have had in 2022. And this is after CapEx and all the others. It's free cash flow.
Yes, so, but would you not expect a much bigger benefit from working capital normalization?
Yes, but you know, I'm the CFO, I'm trying to manage the expectations, but tentatively I'm on your side. So I'm challenging my organization here much more on the free cash flow, but for the guidance, around 200 is the target for this year.
Okay, it's always good to have easy targets, right?
Still have to do it, you know.
Okay, but if you have 150 million extra in working capital in 1 year, you would expect some kind of normalization, unless things stay so tense. If it's only half, it would be like 75 million. So
yes,
it's a big number on your 200. Then the other question, suppose it will go a bit better than you now conservatively think. You go to a net of, you almost have no debt anymore except the payment to your reference shareholder. Right? It's just a conclusion because that's...
No, we have a net debt of around about 250 million currently when you look at our balance sheet. In the net debt, there is this TVL payable excluded because the TVL payable is a normal payable because we have no maturity on this and it's not counted as a financial debt. But the financial debt is around about 250 million.
So it could be that you're net debt free at the end of this year. That was what I wanted to say. Then the question would be, what kind of leverage do you think is desired or do you feel comfortable with?
With the improvement this year on net working capital and a higher free cash flow than in the end, I think we can come back to where we left in 2021 with round about 1.0.
Okay, and that means that around 400-500 million you want to spend on external companies to buy. That's
No. That's not behind that. No. We do not have at this point in time a forced acquisition strategy. It is not excluded, but we are looking at acquisitions, but we are running and managing the company from on the basis of operational improvement and operational organic growth. So this is, but it's always nice to be able to act if something came along that would fit in strategy and that we could integrate and where we would indeed also create value. Right now, our focus is on organic growth and on operational improvement and on defining a strategy that really leads us into the future.
Yeah, and also to add on your question with the net debt EBITDA, yes, for sure, it's better that we come to zero then in the end, this is clear. But I think as a next step, it's the one and then below one.
You can maybe afterwards see if your numbers add up.
So no questions. There are no questions in the call, as I can see. So if there are...
Thank you for being back in the pipeline. I have a couple more, maybe on the free cash flow, since we were talking about that. You mentioned this one-off, but this is you talking about working capital that has been one-off high.
Yes.
But you also had one-off on the P&L. These are costs. I wonder if this had an effect on FCF this year.
In the cash flow calculation?
I mean, the cost for exiting Russia, the cost for exiting Poland.
We had also costs on this for Poland, because Poland was deconsolidated already when we had the news in Poland. But when you look at our higher net working capital and you see it in our financials in the annual report, that we have round about 60, 70 million of our net working capital on write-offs, because this is gone. And we invested for this net working capital in Russia, but we don't get the money back because we cannot sell these. We cannot make products. For 20.
Well, I want both. I was wondering if there was an impact already this year, and if not, if there is an impact coming in 23 from this.
No. And Russia, we have written off everything, so it's all reflected in the numbers 2022. So Russia, nothing more will come. There is a small FX impact, but this is a positive one. Currently, it's around about 11 million plus, depending on the exchange rates will go. So there's no additional impact from Russia expected, and Poland is already in.
It's already booked.
Yes.
Okay, great. That was the first one. Thank you very much. On the debt level, I understand what we have discussed so far, but I remember 2 years ago with the MedMix spin-off, basically you pushed down 400 million debt. So I would have expected a bit of an even better balance sheet right now. Can you sort of explain me why we are not higher? Or was it that it was that bad?
You mean when we talk about net debt, why it went up? So net debt went up. First thing is we paid the dividend, but we have only a net income of 28 million. So here you see the impact. Then, under IFRS, we have the lease liabilities, which we have to pay around about 30 million. We had an FX impact around about 20 million. So we also have the investment, I say investment in net working capital, which is reducing our free cash flow. So we had a lot of, say, smaller issues and items, which in the end led to round about the 170 million net debt.
Okay, thank you. Sorry for this. Mm-hmm. You could have taken separately, you're right.
Yeah.
Can I ask a last one from Mr. Omanen, since we have the opportunity to have you here? Going back to the M&A strategy, I understand you don't have it right now. I wonder if it's because you first have sort of a profitability target in mind for the group, or maybe a sales level in mind that you should reach organically first before going faster on M&A. Is this the reason, or is it really because you sort of prefer to look at what you have right now, learn about the business, and then you decide later?
No, it's all of it. I mean, number one, M&A has to be value accretive, otherwise you shouldn't do it. And there are two elements of it. The one is what do you pay? And the other thing is do you have synergies? And is the company also in a situation, in a position where it is strong on integration and then maximizing the value? And I believe that for the moment we have enough to do internal and enough potential internal to deliver nicely for our shareholders and for all our other stakeholders. If there comes something across where everything is perfect, which is very rarely the case, then I don't exclude an acquisition. But we do not want to be driven. The strategy is not driven by looking for acquisition targets, because you don't want to have that. Unless you speak of a very small acquisitions, then that is a difference. But a transformative acquisition or even a major acquisition, something I believe one should not base strategy on that.
One more question in the room? If there are no questions on the call. If there are no more questions, we are at the end. Thank you, Suzanne. Thank you, Thomas. thank you, all of you, for joining this conference, and I hope, obviously, to see you soon again. And now we will have something to drink and to eat in the back of the room. Thank you very much.
To you that the Executive Committee of Sulzer is present. Thomas is here, but also my colleagues here in the front row. So if you'd like to ask some questions to them or just have a chat, please feel free to do so.